The numbers told the story. They always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Tuesday edition of A Numbers Game. Sorry, haters. No Gil Alexander's Matt Brown here for the next 4 days. Kelly Bidlin over here to my right. We're proudly presented by DraftKings Sportsbook. Coming to you from the D in downtown Las Vegas. Great show with us. Drew Densick going to be on the phone with us. Kai McKeon from Three Man Weave. Talk some college basketball. We're going to talk some soccer.
The champions!
Grass hockey here on the show
grass
today.
Hockey.
Yeah, we're going to talk some grass hockey here on the show today as well. Paul Carr will be here to talk some of that. We're going to get into the final thoughts here of the Super Bowl as well. Hit on some of the big news from last night. And Kelly, I mean, I think the big news from last night, which I'm going to get your opinion. Of course, the esteemed host, one of the esteemed hosts of Hardwood Handicappers here on the network at VSiN, but you know, Wimby goes triple-double, and one of the doubles as part of the triple was blocked.
Yeah.
First rookie to do it since David Robinson. You know, we're talking about a million years ago with all of this. But, you know, listen, it's because I want to ask you, is it because this team is so bad that we are not just completely losing our minds about Wimby and the fact that he is living up to every single thing that we thought that he was going to be coming into this? Because I have a group of friends, and you probably have a group of friends who are, you would consider sports fans, maybe not necessarily hardcore NBA fans, but sports fans in general. They follow what's going on in the sports world. They're trying to keep up with everything across the board. So, you know, they don't sound stupid at the water cooler. And I still hear things about when LeBron has a big night, and I still hear things about when Kevin Durant has a big night, and I still weirdly, you know, they're kind of in that central time zone. So anytime Luka goes nuts, you know, I hear about Luka or the Luka Kyrie kind of 1-2 punch there. But when Wimby does something, unless it is something like this, and even then I was the first person to bring it up and not the people in kind of the group chat and stuff. It's the first time we hear about it. Is it just because of the environment that he's in where it's like limited minutes, the team is absolutely horrible, going nowhere? You even have Pop just literally talking about, yeah, we're not going to play him very much because we're not any good this year. You know, I'm just wondering, because with what we are seeing on the floor in these limited minutes and even in these losses over and over and over again, is a kid that is living up to all of the hype that we talked about heading into the season.
Yeah, I think I think you're exactly right. I think it's very comparable to Luka Doncic, right? It's, we want to see Luka have these crazy nights and go off. He puts up these big numbers, but he's on the Mavericks, and we've seen, and different from Victor Wembanyama, we've seen this story over and over again, kind of in Luka's time there, where it's, we're kind of rushing to give him an MVP award, but you're like, I can't give an MVP award to a guy who's on a near 500 team. And I think that when Wemby first came in, those first few big games, right? Like, they were all the highlights in the fall, and we saw that. I think it's been the allure is kind of, you know, gone away a little bit of I've never seen anything like this before. Now people have seen it for a little while. And yeah, I think now it's okay. Well, he's on a team that's really, really, really bad. And there's no chance of them making the playoffs. So I think sometimes it does get overlooked, but you see a game like last night and it's insane. I mean, you're talking about numbers that nobody, you know, people haven't put, we're talking since the 90s with Olajuwon and David Robinson and what he did in that game last night. And, you know, at what point, I don't think it's if, it's when are we going to see a quadruple-double from this guy? Like, that is going to happen at some point.
You look at this and I see this guy out here, and it's hard to even imagine how young he is, what he has been dealing with over the last year and a half of like knowing you're going to be the number one overall pick in the NBA, knowing what the expectations are going to be for you, and then to go out and actually do it on the court night in, night out. I just don't know if enough is really being made of it. And maybe it's because we heard about him for so long. And maybe it is because we just almost expected it. Like you're even talking about with Luka with that. It's like, maybe we just almost expected it, but it's not easy.
It's not
to
easy
to do this.
Yeah, to keep doing it.
How many first round guys have come into the NBA and not been impactful in their first couple of seasons? Like, grow into kind of the role. Instead, this guy is a superstar from day one out there on the court. And I don't know. I know in the bubble we talk about it, but you don't hear it outside of the bubble. You don't hear it from just the casual sports fan.
I mean, going back to one thing you said, I think it's a scary thought that, and I've agreed with this all along, that Pop has brought, and the Spurs have brought brought him along slowly too. Mm-hmm. Those minutes have increased as the season has gone on. Like, that is something they have been very vigilant of, and I think it's the right thing, right? He is so young. You don't want to screw this up early. Like, he is used to play, was used to playing in Europe, playing less minutes per game. You want to get him into that flow. And really, what's, you don't want to burn him out early in his career when he's not surrounded by good pieces. So I respect what they're doing. And because of that, Matt, like, is why I made, this was 3-4 weeks ago where I was hitting Chet Holmgren a couple times in Rookie of the Year, because he's playing on a team that's battling for the number one seed in the Western Conference. And now you look at those odds today and Wemby's out to -500, and it's hard to argue with. The increased minutes, he's putting up games like that last night. Like, the stat lines are going to probably be overwhelming. And I don't know if Chet's going to stand a chance.
The Super Bowl was the most watched television broadcast of all time this past year, of this past Sunday. 123.4 million people tuned in to watch the Super Bowl, a 7% increase in the largest viewing audience of all time. And you see this, Kelly, and I don't care what anybody says. If you don't believe that there is a Taylor Swift effect to this, then you've lost your mind, because there were enough households that tuned in that were not sports fans at all, because their 12-year-old, 14-year-old, 15-year-old daughter, or even son. I mean, listen, she's popular amongst everyone. Let's not pretend that she's only popular amongst young females. Tuned into this game and get a 7% bump in what was going on. Because listen, sure, you had Mahomes and Kelce on the Chiefs. It is not a hugely popular team on the 49ers. Yeah, I mean, it's a very good football team, but their quarterback is a no-name guy to the vast majority of people who aren't, again, in the sports bubble. Sure, Christian McCaffrey is known amongst sports people. It is not like he is an incredible superstar in just the sports world writ large. And then you go into all their role players. Most people couldn't pick Brandon Ayuk or George Kittle or Debo Samuel out of a lineup. And so if you don't think that Taylor Swift had an effect on the fact that this was the most watched broadcast in history, I might add, in history, we just have to deal with it. We have to understand that the most popular human being on planet Earth decided to embrace the NFL. And Kelly, for me and you who make our living in sports, I'm all for it. I'm down. The more eyeballs, the better. So bring it on again. Hey, guess what? Someone else start dating someone else. Can someone start dating Lady Gaga or something? Like, let's make a triumphant here of all these popular guys dating these superstars. I mean, I'm down with it, man.
Yeah, it is massive, massive numbers. What, ratings wise, you have to go back to the moon landing, right? Yeah. That's number of people. Yeah. It's far exceeded. You go back to ratings. It's the moon landing. Literally, this past Super Bowl and the moon landing.
Yeah, okay. It's just, I mean, come on. There is an effect here. Just call a spade. It is what it is. And we can move on. We don't have to be angry because they flipped the camera to someone who, again, is the most popular human on planet Earth. It's going to happen. It's going to happen.
I knew I was, I'm getting old, was when I was seeing the videos of them partying after the Super Bowl. And I'm like, man, that game was so long. Like, I'd be so exhausted after that. Like, I can't even imagine.
But then you'd see all those zeros in your bank account and realize, I'm expected to party. Yeah, I'm expected to party with all this. We also see that he's the most Super Bowl handle in Nevada history. $185.6 million. It was a 3.7% hold for a $6.8 million win for the books here in Nevada. Good on you. Keep the lights on. I know we keep it going here in this great state. But again, the most wagered on a Super Bowl ever as well this week. I mean, it was just... It was overall, Kelly, to me, a massive win for Nevada / Las Vegas, mainly Las Vegas. I mean, look, this isn't Casino. This isn't The Godfather. Michael Corleone isn't taking out Mo Green, and you're not landing airplanes on the fairway at Las Vegas Country Club. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is a thriving metropolis, a sports hub here. We have 320 days of sunshine a year, 30 casinos up and down the strip, two dozen more here downtown, 150,000 hotel rooms that book 46 million nights a year, world-class shows, whether you want Cirque or you want comedy or you want the weirdness of Absinthe and whatever, or you want to catch some live music with, by the way, world headliners just happening up and down the strip every single night. Hundreds of restaurants that you can go to that you will never get food like that in the town that you live in.
No.
The best collection of nightlife that you will ever see as well. And if you want to get off the strip, world-class golf, some of the best golf courses you'll ever play in your life. There's hiking. I mean, I've done it a couple of times, but they tell me it's amazing. You know, all of the hiking, the craziness, and all of this.
I did it once.
It is, and oh yeah, it's home to the world's largest sports book and some of the greatest viewing experiences of sports that you will ever get in your entire life. No place on earth is more well-equipped than Las Vegas to host the biggest event in all of sports, and I want all of the haters out there that wrote all of the articles saying what a disaster that this was going to be, to come back hat in hand and say, you know what? I was wrong. Yeah, one light pole got knocked over and there was a couple of fist fights in the casinos. Guess where there's also fist fights? In every bar in America every single week when there's varying fan bases in there, because fans are idiots when they get too many cocktails in them. So it was a massive, massive win for this city, for Las Vegas, for everything that went on. And I can't wait for the next one. And the next one's going to be pretty soon.
Mike Palm said it on Sunday, I believe, that he thought the Super Bowl should be here every one out of every 3 years.
Yeah,
I think it should be something like that kind of rotation. It was for as poorly handled as the F1 might have been. Everything you just said, absolutely correct. Like, it was a massive success here. Yes, there was a lot of people in town. Some stuff happened. For us living here, it might have not been extremely convenient, but it was way better than F1, and there was a lot of people having a really good time. I want to ask you about the handle when we come back.
It will be amazing. Listen, we're going to talk more about just overall final thoughts here of the Super Bowl, preview the AFC. We're going to talk about the NFC a little bit later as well. See if there's any bets actually to be made here this early on. It's a numbers game here on a Tuesday.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Are you not a VSiN Pro subscriber quite yet? Do you want to come in and see what we all have going on over there? You can get in for $9.99. It's an introductory offer. You get that daily best bets email. You get access to the betting splits. You get the betting guide for March Madness that is coming up. You can get that again for just $9.99, VSiN.com/subscribe. Matt Brown, Kelly Bidlin in for Gil here. And Kelly, a little bit of information coming in. The Chiefs overtime plan worked out exactly as they had hoped for. It wasn't by accident. Kansas City safety Justin Reed told The Ringer that the Chiefs had first discussed the new overtime rules as far back as training camp. Defensive lineman Chris Jones told the players were prepared for what to expect if Super Bowl went to overtime. We talked through it for 2 weeks, Jones said, how we were going to give the ball to the opponent, and if they score, we were going to go for two at the end of the game. We rehearsed it.
Yeah, your thoughts on the whole overtime ordeal? Yes, we heard that from the Chiefs players, and then Kyle Juszczyk still trying to figure out what's going on in overtime.
Yeah, it's so I think what you're... You know, whether you believe him or not, we're not going to have that debate, because it's like, you know, whether they'd have gone for it or not, we don't know. But like, that's what they say they would have.
Sure.
I mean, that was instantly what Mahomes said afterwards. That is what, now we're getting the Justin Reed, Chris, all of them saying that. So the whole we wanted the third possession thing is kind of like null and void. I don't think that argument really plays out if you're the 49ers, because if you believe, again, that they were honestly going to go for two because they didn't want to give the ball back to the 49ers. I kind of believe with the rule the way that it is, you want to be in control of whether you win or lose the Super Bowl, you know, because, I mean, you don't want to lose on a 58-yard field goal, because then at that point the next score would have won.
Right.
So it's like, could you imagine getting to overtime in the Super Bowl and you lose because a guy had like a 58-yard field goal and then like that's it? That's how you lose the Super Bowl? Like, probably not, you know?
It would suck. It would suck.
Yeah, so you probably want the control of that.
I still love the rule change though. Like, what also sucks is one team having the ball going down and scoring and the whole game's over. Like, I loved the chaos of that, honestly. I really did. I think it's a great new rule that we've added.
Let's ask Drew Densick what he thinks about it. You can find him over at NBC Sports Bet. You can find him on the Twitter machine at @whale_capper. Drew, did you know all of the overtime rules? Were you 100% apprised of how this was going to go down?
Oh yeah, without question. You know, you have to kind of be aware of them if you're betting playoff football because the amount of total points available in the overtime is now 22, which changes the potential distribution of points scored in the playoffs. And the fact that we had our first overtime game with the new rules and we still didn't get a total over is kind of funny. It was an interesting, to see how it played out and see the decision-making of the coaches. And, I know there's been a lot of criticism lobbed because people think they know pretty surely what the right thing to do is one way or the other. And I think it's probably foolish to say that you have certainty that taking it or, electing to kick is surely plus EV. I think it was, it was probably a fine decision when it's all said and done. And I think the decision that's not really coming under much scrutiny, where I would have been a little bit more aggressive, would have been on 4th and 4, electing for the short field goal there when you were driving pretty effectively on that Chiefs defense, was pretty surprising. When you elect to kick the field goal in overtime to go up 22-19, you are putting a lot of faith on your defense to come up with a 4-down stop. You have taken, and there's a lot of people who are using kind of conversation about, taking the decision into your own hands versus putting it in your opponent's, blah, 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 blah. Well, when you're up 3 and you hand your opponent the ball in a sudden death scenario, you have predetermined for them that they are in 4-down territory, which means your defense is going to need to come up with a 4-down stop before allowing their opponent to get a field goal try. And while that was generally successful for the Niners for a lot of the balance of the game, they were excellent defense in the red zone for most of that contest. You are forcing your opponent to go for it on 4th down. Whereas if you go for it on 4th down, do not convert, you have the Chiefs relatively pinned, and you have the Chiefs in a defensive position where they're not going to go for it on 4th down. The 4th and 1 that they converted with the Pat Mahomes scramble, that really kind of got that drive going. That doesn't happen. The Chiefs punt there. And so it's a little, kind of lost in the looking back and, knowing what happened in hindsight. But, I would have expected that as successful as you had been on that drive against that Chiefs defense, that going for it on 4th and 4 would not have been out of the question at all. And, Shanahan is, if you have confidence in the plays you have cooked up, you don't have the play that you need to get those 4 yards to set up a goal to go opportunity, then, I don't know what you're, I don't really know what else you expected. So, I'm a bitter Niners backer here. So there's a lot of, coulda, shoulda, woulda about this game.
Yeah.
The overtime period itself was, the third down play in particular was painful before the field goal attempt. As you go into regulation, the decision making around the 2-minute warning really the key play on third down out of the 2-minute warning will haunt me and Kyle and everyone else who is pretty hopeful the Niners were going to win in this one. So that there were somewhere in the ballpark of 8 self-inflicted wounds by the Niners in this game that made it closer than it should have. And if you kind of play a cleaner game from start to finish here, it's a multiple score win for the Niners, and the Chiefs don't really have the opportunity to give Mahomes the chance to steal the win. And because of the, self-inflicted wounds, it's a game, and Mahomes can be the hero, and history is written that way. So it was a tough outcome altogether, but you can't really ask for a more entertaining football game, I don't think.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, listen, even though I was on the Chiefs side of things, I actually came out of this game, I was at least happy that it wasn't one of the things where we could just sit there and then point and go like, well, Purdy's there it is. The game's too big for Purdy. And that's the reason why I'm actually glad we come out of it. And it's not just like, oh, everything was Purdy's fault. And then all the narratives leading in just played exactly out, that the game was too big for him, and he was getting away with stuff all season long, and all those turnover-worthy plays were going to come back to haunt him in the Super Bowl against his Chiefs vaunted defense and all that. So I'm actually kind of glad, even though, you know, it other factors did play into it, special teams, of course, and all that, that they went awry, but I'm glad that there wasn't just like one scapegoat here for this game, because like you said, I think it would have taken away from it a little bit.
Could not agree with you more. If the discourse coming out of it was all about Brock Purdy, I would have been pretty disappointed. The actual kind of crazy thing, and I'm sure this has been covered, you guys may have even already talked about it, but the Chiefs' ability to recover fumbles in these two Super Bowls against the Niners is kind of an absurd. The fumble recovery stuff, I mean, maybe we don't really, kind of properly kind of treat fumble luck at, you know, maybe we're treating it as luck when it's not really. I don't really know. I mean, obviously one of the things that made Brady and the Belichick run so effective was they just never lost fumbles. The Chiefs having five fumbles and recovering, they've had six fumbles and they recovered five of them. And the Niners having two and losing both, is pretty unbelievable. And, those two lost fumbles swung at least 10 points in this game for the Niners, if not 14. Whereas the Chiefs lost fumbles, that took points off the boards for them, surely, but the ones that they recovered, were monumentally huge. So, it was a weird, fluky game ultimately. And I think if you want to just kind of say, well, was there one handicapping angle that kind of stood above the rest that people should have kind of seen coming, or, as I reflect on it, what I should have seen coming. And I guess I was a little bit quick to dismiss the impact of experience for the Chiefs. The fact that these guys played in this game last year as a group, the fact that Mahomes has played in as many, many high leverage games and as many high leverage moments as possible, and has done so well in this moments, I think was pretty telling. And I don't think that's a, kind of a false narrative there. So, ultimately the Chiefs being the more experienced team and having less kind of, mistakes and being less rattled and being more cool in the high leverage moments. I mean, I think all that made the difference in the end.
All right, Drew, we got about 30 seconds here. 49ers open as the favorite for next year. The Chiefs right behind them. And then a pretty big gap to the Ravens and the Bills and the Lions. Rightfully so in the Niners and Chiefs. I mean, does it look like they're going to be the best two teams in your opinion?
I'm fine with that, but I also think that the road to back to the Super Bowl is probably easier for the Chiefs than the Niners at this point. And I know the AFC is pretty, is pretty stacked with elite quarterbacks. But I think the fact that the Packers and the Rams come back into the mix here with even better, and the Cowboys are still a factor, makes it, it's going to make it tougher for the Niners to get back to the Chiefs, in my opinion.
Find him over at NBC Sports Bet on the Twitter machine at @whale_capper. He is Drew Densick. Thanks for the time this morning. Morning, my man.
Hey, best luck, guys.
Come back, talk a little bit more about the AFC and some NFC preview as well.
The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Hour number two of a numbers game here on a Tuesday. Matt Brown in for Gil. Kelly Bidlin here on the desk with me. Kelly, we talked a lot of Super Bowl stuff here. We conveniently didn't talk the waste management, where a fifth straight triple-digit winner has emerged on tour, and it has been not the greatest golf season so far.
Yeah, not ideal. Long shots coming at you later today. It has not been a great start. Yeah, I was so jealous. Peel back the curtain. We did long shots last week. I knew Wes hit one. I didn't know we hit that second one, and it is we're at the point where it's time for us to get off the schneid. I need a winner, man. I need to put some positive in that betting account.
Well, it's like, we load the card this week with the triple digit guy, and like the one of the three favorites is going to win. Like that's
what it is.
Yeah, it's going to flip on us, because that's what the golf gods have been going for us so far this year. It's been unfair. Five straight triple digit winners. The crowd getting way out of control over there. Zach Johnson having to scream at people. all of that.
We're going to have to spend a minute on that next segment. Yeah. I don't want to make Kai wait any longer, but there's that's such a fine line there. Like, what, did we never think this was ever going to be a problem one of these years?
Let's encourage people to go get blackout drunk and then get mad at them when they do that. Like,
exactly.
That's the thing that we should definitely do. All right, let's talk to three-man weaves Kai McKeon, some college basketball here. Kai, thanks for the time, man.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Doing well. It is obviously the transition from football for most people out there. There are a lot of people who can really only handle betting one sport at a time. And, you know, that's kind of me because I'm so inside the bubble when it comes to all the NFL stuff. And so people are moving out and branching out. Of course, March Madness coming to us here fairly soon. So great time to have you on to kind of reset people on what's been going on in the college basketball landscape and where they can kind of go as we head into March Madness. So my first question to you really is there a team that is, in your opinion, head and shoulders above the rest, or would it be kind of a couple of teams, a handful of teams, or do you think this is like last year I remember talking to you where it was like, I don't really love any team that much more than any of the others?
Yeah, I think it's probably the biggest group of title contenders that I can remember at the top of the country. I think there's maybe 7-8 teams that I could see winning the title. And that's rare. Usually you get right 3 or 4 teams by this point, especially in mid-February, where you feel fairly confident. This season, I think it's pretty wide open, and that's going to make for an awesome NCAA tournament. In my opinion, Arizona for me is still the best team in the country at their top gear. But again, lots of different teams I think can win it this season.
Is there a team that, as you have watched over the course of the season, that you kind of just started to fall in love with? I don't know. Maybe that team is Arizona. Maybe you weren't high on them heading into the season. But is there any team that you were lukewarm on, and then as you continue to watch more and see what they were doing on the court, that you're like, you know what? I think this is a team maybe I overlooked a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, North Carolina was a team I was down on coming into the year. I'll be honest. I don't think Hubert Davis is a fantastic coach. I thought that'd be a huge problem for them, but the talent has really won out in North Carolina, and he has done a bad job this season, relatively speaking. But RJ Davis is the reason why they've been so good this year. He's really evolved into an All-American point guard. He's really led the team. Baycott's been Baycott, and then they've really hit on transfers. Harrison Ingram, Cormac Ryan, they've been really, really good for this team, as well as their reclass transfer LA could do. So North Carolina's a team that I knew had talent. I doubted the coaching, but the talent has really shown out so far this year.
Now, this doesn't necessarily have to be a team that is like completely disappointing, but is there a team that you had targeted as a team that you definitely liked that maybe has wet the bed a little bit along the way?
There's a few of those teams. Yeah, I mean, Michigan. If I'm being honest, Michigan was a team I expected to have a good season. I really liked they brought in with Kamwa, Olivier Kamwa from Tennessee. Terrace Reed was a guy that I thought would take a huge leap as a sophomore. I like Doug McDaniel, a sophomore point guard who's not allowed to play in road games right now for whatever reason, not sure why. But they've really tanked, and it's been in the media quite a bit. But yeah, the coaching situation is strange with Martelli and Howard going back and forth. Michigan's a team that's really disappointed me this year.
Kai, we see a bunch of these SEC teams that are kind of, when we look at the betting odds, Tennessee 11-1 to win it all, Auburn at 18, Alabama 22, Kentucky at 25. What do you think of the conference overall this year? And do you think that any of those teams has the makeup that you're looking for as a team that could take it all the way?
Yeah, really good league. Obviously, I think Tennessee's probably the front runner. If you're going to make me choose one, the difference between this year's Tennessee team and past years, and I've said this a few times at other places, but their offense is actually very good this season. It's one of Rick Barnes's best offenses ever, certainly at Tennessee. And then a big reason why is Dalton Knecht. Their transfer from Northern Colorado has been fantastic, can score 30 on any given night. He's an All-American. They're playing faster. They're not their typical Tennessee team that plays in the half court. They're playing in transition. And I think that extra offensive boost will help them in the NCAA tournament, whereas in the past, they could stagnate a bit. The defense is still there. So Tennessee, I think, of that group, is my favorite to win the title.
All right, Kai, there's people that are, like we said, coming in from the NFL. Again, talking to three-man weaves, Kai McKeon here. If you're coming in from the NFL, they want to have a bigger ticket in their account. They say, you know what, Kai, you can tell me UConn's the best team or Purdue's the best team all you want or Houston. I don't want a 650 in my account. I don't want a 950 in my account. So what's a team that you think, you know, again, if you hit the right, if you get the right run, if you kind of peak at the right time, is there some middling team out there that maybe someone could tuck into their account and feel pretty good about come tournament time?
I mean, I still think FAU is a team to look at. They're probably 50 to one. I haven't checked in a while, but we've seen them do it before. They have essentially the same team as last year. I think they've taken the foot off the gas a little bit in conference play. They're still 9-2 in the American, but it seems like they've been a bit complacent being the favorite all of a sudden in that league. But a team I really like is Indiana State. Not so much to win the title, but I think they can make a run to the Final Four. I put in a future the other day on them to make the Final Four. This team is awesome. They have the makeup of like a Loyola Chicago, like a FAU of old. Just awesome guards, great coaching. And then Robbie Avila, he's going to be the national star if they make a deep run in the tournament.
I am going to put an Indiana, because see, sometimes you ask questions for personal reasons. That's not just for the audience out there, Kelly. And yeah. So like, you know, I asked was maybe asking that was like, you know, that you do the whole like, you know, asking for a friend right, when the friend is actually.
So you wrote down Indiana State and I wrote down FAU because I'm going back to my Owls again this year. Kai, let's roll 70 to one. I'm seeing them right now.
Well, guess what? I'm going to put in both. Yeah. So I'm going to put in both. So how you like that? I'm going to put in both in the account. All right. So let's talk about some action that you are on here tonight. You're liking some Boston College.
I like Boston College. Yeah, man, Louisville's been competitive the last few games. I'll be honest, but they're down to 8 scholarship players now. Sky Clark, I think he was announced that he might be out for the season. Definitely this game. And they just beat Florida State without him in the lineup, but I think it's going to catch up with them. The lack of depth, their only consistent scoring avenue is the free throw line. Boston College does a really good job of defending without fouling. And I think on the other end of the floor, BC gets whatever they want against Louisville's defense. So I like BC. They're around -9 right now, -8.5 in the market.
And then let's head down to Ole Miss and Kentucky. Kentucky currently 8.5-point favorites there over Ole Miss, but I don't think that's the angle you're looking at.
I like the over here. Kentucky, the best over team in the country this season, 18-5 to the over, 8-2 in the SEC play. 4 straight overs, and really the books aren't inflating these lines. I think KenPom's line today is even higher than the market right now. And they just go. They have a perfect formula. They score easily. They're not a good defensive team, and they run. And I think Ole Miss will play with tempo in this game. Their offensive tempo is not slow this season. They're playing fast. It's the defensive end. They're kind of slowing teams down that deflates their possessions in their games. I don't think they can keep Kentucky out of transition, so I think this one ends up being high possession, especially at Kentucky. And Ole Miss's offense is solid. They should put up points against Kentucky's defense. So I like the over here. I'm seeing, 161.5, or I believe, I like the over.
All right, Kai, before we let you go, we know these people are kind of going to swoop in. They're going to parachute in. They're either going to bet the top of the odds board or they're going to bet, you know, one of the blue bloods when it all comes down to it to win the national title. What's the team they should fade of those? What is the team like, hey, man, I am not bought in on this team. This is the one I would not actually put in the account.
Oh, man, if this hits, I'm going to be embarrassed here. you know, I would stay away from teams that really lack on the defensive end. Alabama. They're the number one team in offensive team in the country this year in KenPom. They're 76th in defense. Those type of teams typically do not win in March. Miami has been an outlier the last couple of years, making runs to the Final Four. But generally, you have to be good on both ends of the floor. If you're an outlier on one end or the other, it doesn't end well. I think Alabama's a team that doesn't get there this year.
You can find him and all his work at Three Man Weave. He is Kai McKee. And Kai, thanks for your time this morning, man. Appreciate you.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Have a good one.
I saw you writing down. I was writing down. We were scribbling down things over here. I'm like, that's a bet for old Matt over here.
Yeah, writing two different teams down. Yeah.
Listen, when you are just deep in DVOA and EPA and all this stuff for like 6.5 months and all these things, like, it's refreshing to hear. You know what? Throw in something on Indiana, say, I'm like, you know what, buddy? I will. I'm going to do that.
Been a lot of NBA for me mixed in there, too. Yeah. So, you know, even just period regular season college basketball is not going to get seen a lot. But if I have a 70-1 ticket rolling into the tournament, let's go. That's It's what we're looking to do here over the next month.
I'm pretty glad about that. So as we go to break, we were talking about a little bit about the waste management and just things getting out of control there. I saw the statistics, and it's like over the last 3 years, the amount of arrests and ejections and like 86s where literally you can't come back ever again has tripled over the last 3 years. It is a thing where people just want to go down there and get hammered, Kelly. They don't care about the golf. And I don't know if that's a horrible thing, but, you know, that's the tournament.
I would just tell I don't want to say we're overreacting. We're overreacting a little bit, though. And random weather had to do with this, where there were stories about groups of dudes going straight from the bars to the gates to wait for them to open in the morning. Like, this is why these things happen.
I'll put it this way. It's one tournament a year that this happens. If you don't like it, don't go play it.
Yes,
it's just kind of one of those deals. Let's talk some NBA MVP when we come back.